Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
Grandpa, come on down.
Oh, Mommy.
Don't waste your eyesight, Grandpa.
Well, you know, once a clockmaker, and it's been a few minutes off lately.
Grandpa, are you all right?
Me? Well, never better. Why, Mom?
Well, it's just that you didn't come down for dinner. In fact, you haven't been out of your room all day.
Well, my friend's been acting up today. I can't seem to get it regulated just right, you know.
Grandpa, we know how you love the clock.
You see, it's ticking along nicely now. We shouldn't have any trouble for a long while. Of course, with a clock as old as that, well, you're bound to run into problems, you know.
Hey, wait.
What happened?
My clock!
Now, look, Pops, take it easy.
Oh, I'm all right.
Boy, you had us worried there for a minute.
Not yet, I guess. Not yet.
The wind has died and the chimes are still again. Trees stand tall as they cover me in shade. In the mirror, a maiden stares at me as the secret fades. Years turn to red, the nights are getting colder, seasons will change.
I think I cheated your friends. That old clock hasn't been running right for the last 40 years. Why, it's taken everything I ever laid in clockmaking just to keep it going.
Really, Grandpa?
As a matter of fact, it stopped ticking for the last time just a few moments ago.
How do you know that?
Oh, don't ask me how I know, but I know.
Open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination, and you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Talking Twilight Zone, and I would like to welcome my co-hosts, Robert and Bobby. Hello, guys. Say hello. say goodnight, Gracie. And I also want to welcome Rick. How are you, Rick?
Good night, Gracie. Oh, I'm sorry.
Good night. Hello. Okay, that was a good opening, Robert. I'm surprised that you didn't use... the Rolling Stones' Time is on my side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was trying to think of some different ones. The middle one was a song I didn't hear before, so it was kind of interesting. Clock Ticks On was the name of that one. So.
Mm. Yeah, that was
a little British.
That was good. That was very good opening thing. Good songs. I liked the first one especially. Before we get started today, I would like to just take a minute to acknowledge the passing of Robin Williams.
Nanu, Nanu.
From Mork.
Shazbat.
To Hook. To Mrs. Doubtfire. To his manic, make you laugh so hard your ribs hurt comedy specials. Robin Williams was a legend. But behind the zaniness lurked something darker: drug abuse and depression. Williams described himself as a man looking over a cliff.
It's not just a fear of falling, or, you know, it's the thing of, you can do this.
You can jump.
You know, you can fly. And the idea of just one. For someone who has no tolerance for it, that's not a possibility.
And this morning, according to authorities in California, they got a 911 call reporting that Williams was not breathing at his home in Tiburon. They're calling it a case of suspected suicide. Tonight, his representative saying Williams had been battling severe depression of late, and ABC News has learned Williams recently checked himself back into rehab. His wife, Susan Schneider, issuing a statement tonight saying, "I lost my husband and my best friend. I am utterly heartbroken." A tidal wave of sadness and sympathy online tonight from fans and fellow celebrities. Steve Martin tweeting, "I could not be more stunned by the loss of Robin Williams. Mensch, great talent, acting partner, genuine soul." John Travolta, "He loved us all and we loved him back. He had only the best things to say about people, and we are all better for having known him. I love you, Robin." And so many more tonight. Bill Cosby, Tim Allen, Kevin Spacey, Reba McEntire, and this from Ellen DeGeneres. "I can't believe the news about Robin Williams. He gave so much to so many people. I'm heartbroken." We spoke by phone tonight with Cheryl Hines, who guest starred on Williams' recent CBS sitcom, The Crazy Ones.
It's so hard right now because it's so tragic, but I just feel very thankful and grateful that I got to work with him and I got to be his friend.
Even President Obama weighing in tonight. "He was one of a kind. He arrived in our lives as an alien, but he ended up touching every element of the human spirit." And in Hollywood itself tonight at the iconic comedy club, The Laugh Factory, where Williams performed many times, a tribute right there on the marquee. Robin Williams, rest in peace. Make God laugh. For Williams, life began in Chicago in 1951. His mother, a former model, his father, an executive at Ford. He was, surprisingly, a quiet child. The first comic impression he did, imitating his grandmother to his mom. It was only in high school, in drama class, that he overcame that shyness. He went on to Juilliard, and shortly thereafter, in the late 1970s, he burst into the national consciousness as an oddball alien named Mork.
Nanu, Nanu.
In the TV show Mork and Mindy.
Fly, be free!
He ad-libbed most of his dialogue and his wild physical comedy. The show was a huge hit. Then came a series of live comedy specials, also big hits.
"We believe now the accident at Chernobyl has been taken care of. If you'd like to follow us into the plant, I'll show you around."
And then, of course, the movies. There was that unforgettable role in Popeye. But Williams very quickly moved into dramatic territory with The World According to Garp in 1982, about a struggling writer and his romantic entanglements.
"It's my first short story. I wrote it for you.
You wrote it for me."
Many of his most famous roles mixed both wit and warmth. Good Morning Vietnam.
"What is a demilitarized zone? Sounds like something out of The Wizard of Oz."
"Oh, no, don't go in there."
The Dead Poets Society.
"On this class, you can either call me Mr. Keating, or if you're slightly more daring, oh, Captain, my Captain."
Mrs. Doubtfire.
"Hello!
and Good Will Hunting.
Unless you want to talk about you, who you are, then I'm fascinated. I'm in.
For which he won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor. But all that on-screen humor masked inner turmoil. In the early 1980s, a problem with cocaine, which he claimed to have quit after the fatal overdose of his friend and fellow comedian John Belushi. He spoke to ABC's Barbara Walters about it.
People also feel, in writing about you and, you know, in reading the interviews, that the death of John Belushi was an enormous influence on you, rather than just, well, I don't know, you tell me what it was for you.
It's only the fact that, you know, here's a guy who is probably one of the toughest, strongest people you could ever meet. And he's taken out, you know, and it cleaned up a whole generation of people. Because this guy was as strong as anybody you could ever meet. I mean, John, for a laugh, could run into that wall and get up and do it again. So if it took him out, you realize that, you know, we're all pretty mortal.
When we hear about people using drugs, most of the time they use them to get a high.
Yeah, for me it was a great way of escaping. It was a great way to cut off from people because it was the only time I could escape, you know.
He got sober for many years, it appears, but then he relapsed, as he discussed on his comedy tour, Weapons of Self-Destruction.
And alcohol is especially dangerous for people like myself, alcoholics. Or you can say ethanol challenge, whatever you want to call it.
Williams checked himself into rehab in 2006, and he talked about it in this interview with ABC's Diane Sawyer.
So to talk about it as caused by something...
caused by anything, it's just there. It's just, you know, it's latent, just waits. It lays in wait, and for the time when you think, it's fine now, I'm okay. And then, beep, and then the next thing you know, it's not okay. It's not going so well. And then you realize, where am I? This is strange. I didn't realize I was in Cleveland.
How are you?
I am well. Very well. Okay. It is a good thing.
Is it a good thing?
Oh, yeah, it's nice.
2 months?
2 months. Club medicated. Away, quiet time. Good, though. I'm back. People say, how do you feel? With my fingers. How does it? Don't drink. What are you doing to stay that way? Don't drink.
Relapse cost him his second marriage, but he soon sought to clean up his act for the sake of his career and, most importantly, his 3 children, as discussed in this interview.
But the one thing that cleaned me up from that was having a kid. That's immediate. If that's the same, and I didn't have any rehab or any group, so I just...
Really? You did it by yourself?
Oh, totally. It was kind of, I took my mother's advice of, you know, vitamins and exercise. When you have a kid, you're pretty much awake and smell like piss anyway, so you don't need drugs. You know, you're like, hey, where's the baby?
It is fitting, then, that his final posting on social media was a tribute to the daughter he loved. Happy birthday to Ms. Zelda Ray Williams, he wrote. Quarter of a century old today, but always my baby girl. Happy birthday, Zelda Williams. Love you.
If the 60-year-old Robin Williams could get the 30-year-old Robin Williams in a room, what would you tell him?
Enjoy. Don't be running so fast. And that's it. How much have you loved? That's a simple question. How much have you loved? Love doing what you do, or love being with the people? If you can answer that question pretty positively, then you're going, you're doing okay. Mm-hmm. It's a good life.
Very, very talented and wonderful comedian, actor.
Nanu,
yes. Yes, wonderful actor, wonderful comedian, a genius of a comedian. And it's very sad that we lost this great talent. He's had a lot of tributes this week, and you know, a lot of people are really very sad and very moved by it. So I just want to say it's a sad passing, and we'll miss you, Robin.
Also the passing Lauren Bacall as well.
More on a remarkable life from CNN Entertainment correspondent Michelle Turner.
You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
With those words in the film To Have and To Have Not, audience imagination soared and a screen icon was born. The confident, smoldering expression, the downturned face and upturned eyes earned Lauren Bacall the nickname The Look. Ironically, the 19-year-old struck the pose because she felt insecure.
I mean, that was what started The Look, was nerves, just trying to keep my head steady.
Bacall was more than a movie legend. She was from Hollywood's golden era and the wife of actor Humphrey Bogart.
And her tears flowed like wine.
The Big Sleep was among a handful of films they made together, but their love affair was one of Tinseltown's greatest romances. Bogart died of cancer in 1957, leaving Bacall a widow at 32 with two small children. For a time, she was engaged to family friend and singer Frank Sinatra. When the romance fizzled, Sinatra headed to Las Vegas. Soon, Bacall fell in love again and married actor Jason Robards, with whom she had a son. She blamed his drinking for their divorce.
I don't even know if he enjoyed it, but he was hooked on it, and it really almost destroyed him, and fortunately did not.
Bacall was born Betty Joan Persky on September 16, 1924. Her parents were Jewish immigrants who divorced when she was just six. As a lanky teen, she modeled to earn extra money, taking her mother's maiden name, Bacall, adding a second L to make it easier to pronounce. Film director Howard Hawks saw her photograph on a magazine cover. A screen test later, and Hawks changed her name.
He felt that Lauren Bacall was better sounding than Betty Bacall. He had a vision of his own. He was a Svengali. He wanted to mold me. He wanted to control me.
Big screen or small, even her fellow actors viewed her as a legend.
John Huston, Charlie Chaplin, and, you know, she just knows or has been around everyone that has formed what we know of this business.
Bacall's film co-stars read like the who's who of Hollywood, but it was on Broadway where she achieved her most critical acclaim.
Oh, I loved it. That was my original dream, anyway, to be on stage.
She spent nearly 20 years on the stage, starring in Cactus Flower, Applause, and Woman of the Year, earning two Tony Awards. In her later years, her film career saw a renaissance. She starred opposite Barbara Streisand in The Mirror Has Two Faces, earning her only Oscar nomination. And she was still acting in her 80s in such films as Dogville and Birth with Nicole Kidman. A diva. A film star, a Broadway jewel, and a classic legend of an era gone by.
Lauren Bacall and Ed Nelson. The triple play never fails. As soon as one goes, two more follow almost immediately. That's something that has been for decades and decades and decades that never changes. As soon as one goes, two more go. But coincidence or curse or whatever it is, but it happens. But anyway, it's kind of sad, and I liked most of his movies, and I liked him very much. That's just a sad thing. So anyway, we are today discussing 90 Years Without Slumbering, and I'm going to turn it over to Robert for the opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Each man measures his time, some with hope, some with joy, some with fear. But Sam Forstman measures his allotted time by a grandfather's clock. A unique mechanism whose pendulum swings between life and death. A very special clock that keeps a special kind of time in the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, very special clock. Sam Forstman, he's an old man, and he thinks that he'll die if his grandfather clock stops ticking. So he spends all of his time working on the clock. And his family gets very upset about this. He lives with his granddaughter, and of course she can't understand why her grandfather is so obsessed with that clock. You know, it's day and night. He spends working on it, regulating it, making sure that it's, right on time, not slowing down. So they send him to a psychiatrist to speak with a psychiatrist, and he reveals to the psychiatrist his fear that he will die if the clock stops. So the psychiatrist advises him to sell the grandfather clock, and he does. But he offers to maintain it for the new owners, and they agree. 2 weeks after he sells the clock, the new owners go on vacation for the weekend. So Sam can't wind the clock. The clock stops, and so he's forced to confront his fear of death, and his spirit shows up to inform him that it's time to go. Well, he chooses to stop believing in the clock's power, declaring instead that he wants to live and see his great-grandchild grow up. He therefore continues to live, and the spirit vanishes. And then he tells his expecting granddaughter, when that clock died, I was born again. Ah, how touching. How very touching. But it's, to me, it's really a shame that so much talent was wasted on such a weak script. I mean, the old guy, he loves the grandfather clock. He's owned it his whole life. He's obsessive about it, and he thinks he's going to die if it stops. So he's diligent about keeping it wound and running. Okay, he's a little eccentric. I mean, people, old people have worse obsessions than that, or worse eccentricities. But he lives with the granddaughter and her husband, Doug, and they think he's off his rocker, or at least a little bit off his rocker. You know, but to me, in my opinion, other than his obsession with the clock, he seemed pretty normal, and he seemed perfectly happy to me. So I don't know why they were so concerned. So he was obsessed with the clock. Big deal. I understand Marnie cared about her grandfather, but they should have just left him alone. He was happy. And they talk him into seeing the psychiatrist. He tells the guy to get rid of the clock. He gets rid of it. But then he ends up getting in trouble with the cops because he tries to break into the house of the people who bought it because he wants to wind it. Now, in all honesty, and to, you know, in his defense, the woman who bought it, she said he could continue the scheduled maintenance, so she should have told him she was going out of town. And they could have made some arrangements. I don't know.
Or given him the key or something.
A key,
yeah.
Exactly, a key to get in there. I mean, it didn't look like anybody you had to fear of, you know, burglarizing your place, you know. She should have at least let him know. I guess maybe she didn't take him as very seriously either. You know, she probably figured, oh, you know, it's a big deal. You know, he'll do it when I get back. But overall, in my opinion, it was a pretty lame episode. And it didn't really follow the original written story by George Clayton Johnson. I was disappointed in the ending, which is a shame because I like Ed Wynn. I like him very much. And, you know, I spend 25 minutes feeling sorry for Sam, and then he changes his mind and decides the clock didn't control his fate after all. I spent all this time messing with the clock, but it doesn't really mean that much to me. You know, I think that this would have been a much better story if the original George Clayton Johnson's script or his written story had been used. I mean, I don't know if anyone knows anything about that story, but in the original Johnson story, the clock stops and he does die at the end.
I was going to ask you about that, which ending you liked about that story. If you want,
I think I like the original one. It's more Twilight Zone like. You know, this is just like a sappy, sweet. You know, the clock doesn't really determine my fate, and I'm going to live happily ever after with my granddaughter and great-granddaughter, you know, or great-grandchild, whatever it is. I thought it was a shame. It should have had the ending the way it was written. You know,
did
George
Rob stop it?
No. I don't know. Actually, it wasn't Rod. I don't know if it was CBS. I don't know who stopped it, but they changed it around. And
No. I mean adopt the script.
Yeah.
That's why.
Oh, you think they just? But it wasn't
no,
Rod.
I think...
You know, Rod wouldn't have changed that.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but they did a Nothing in the Dark. You mean, what's the difference between Nothing in the Dark and 90 Years of Us Slumbering?
I don't think it was Rod who made that decision, Rick. I think it was other people because Rod had no problem with showing death in Twilight Zone. I mean.
That's true.
I think it was just one of those things that, well, George Clayton Johnson was very upset. He was not happy at all with the changes, and he refused to be credited in the episode. As a matter of fact, I think he was credited under a pseudonym, if I read that correctly.
Well, he wasn't happy with Kick the Can either, and that got changed.
They screwed around with a lot of his stories, and he wasn't happy with that at all. And there were a few other people that were disappointed in changes made to their stories. One we did recently, I can't remember what it was, that the person who wrote it was mad about what they did to it. Richard Matheson. And I can't remember what the story was, but they changed it, and he didn't like the changes. But, you know, this was Ed Wynn's second Twilight Zone appearance. Now, the first one was in season one for the Angels. And I like that much better than this one. I really do like Ed Wynn. I think it's just it's like Ernest Troux. You know, they're just cute little old guys. They're like the epitome of the cute little grandfather. You know, you just like them. They're sweet. They're likable. You love to watch them act, you know. And But I did like one. And in case anybody didn't know this, Edwin is Keenan Wynn's father. Maybe some of you knew that already. And Keenan also starred in a season one episode of The Zone called A World of His Own. And they also had an earlier connection to Rod Serling in 1956 when they both co-starred together in Rod's Requiem for a Heavyweight on Playhouse 90. So, you know, they did have a little bit of a connection there with him, and, you know, they worked together. And one other thing, some of you might have noticed that one of the men who was moving the grandfather clock for Sam was none other than Dick Wilson, also known as Mr. Whipple, who spent 25 years telling us not to squeeze the Charmin. Exactly. Yes, Mr. Whipple. So, I mean, I thought the acting was good. I had no problem at all with the acting. But unfortunately, the story just, it was lacking in so many ways, and I think they should have left it alone and just gone with the original writing. But so the best rating, even though I like Edwin very much, best rating I can give this is a 1 because I think it was just a little too sappy for me. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Robert.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. Yeah, I mean, the way the course of the story went, I mean, the grandfather clock was not a cursed object, that thing, because, I mean, if you went with the original ending, maybe you could say, well, maybe the grandfather clock was a cursed object. But then by changing the ending, now you just made it like, well, it was just a regular old clock, you know, grandfather
yeah.
clock. And
right.
I think that took some of the feel of the story out of
right.
it.
Right, a cursed yeah. object is more in keeping with a Twilight Zone type of story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it comes down to superstition is all it is, you know, the superstition that he had for an object, like, you know, the clock. I felt the story was boring and uninteresting, to be honest about it.
It was slow.
Hmm. But, you know, like I said, it's just superstition was pretty much the big part of the episode here. And then we get the fight, you know, in the spirit or conscious at night where he's sleeping, and he's, I guess that you could say it's a his life, and very much reminded me of the movie All That Jazz with Roy Scheider, where
great movie.
You know, the whole movie was about, you know, him and his fight and struggles to where you have him fighting Death, who is played by Ben Vereen, and you know, his fighting to live in that movie. So, I mean,
well, he did have three or four heart attacks in a row or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The main character of
All That Jazz.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a cool movie. I saw it in theaters.
Yeah, I liked it too. He was just too far gone to really try to make it through, but at least with Ed Wynn's character, he had the ability to step up and say, well, you know, I'm not going to let this object run my life. And he pretty much broke the chain there, you know, the connection to the clock. So, like I said, and because of that, it wasn't a cursed object. It was just an ordinary clock, pretty much. He was just having to rely on too much. But the problem with this is there's no meat to the story. And 23 minutes was way too long even for this. So, you know, usually I never give a 0. I like to, unless it's the Bard, which fortunately that one deserved it. But however, I feel that if it's put on the Twilight Zone, it's worth at least a 1 for Ed Wynn. So I give it a 1 out of 5 just for...
That's why I give it a 1, yeah. They should have taken the ending from One for the Angels. You know, where he died in the end of that. They should have taken that and put it into this.
Well, what about What You Need? The Slippery Shoes. That guy died. Mm-hmm. I can't understand why the reasoning behind this is any different from any of the other. Well, maybe at that time, Ed Wynn was popular. Didn't he play Hatter and Alice in Wonderland, and he's done various things?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So
there were a lot of episodes where the character died in the Twilight Zone, you know, and there's no reason why they had to change this. I mean, especially since Johnson was very upset about it.
Well, the problem with Twilight Zone in this season is starting to lose its teeth. And, you know, Bobby's reminded us of that, you know, this is just, let's dig at whatever scripts. And
yeah, they're just gumming it at this point. They're just gumming it.
Yeah, like our review we got coming up for Queen of Nile.
We're going to skip, we agreed with you, we'll skip Owl Creek.
Yeah, but I do want to bring that up and put it in as when we either do Spur of the Moment or Queen of Nile at Occurrence Owl Creek, but I do want to talk about why Rod did what he did, and I call that his Gone Fishing episode.
Yeah, that's
like,
cool.
You know, let's all go fishing for a week.
That would have been the next episode, right?
Mm.
Yeah, that would have been. So when we do the next one, then we'll, you know, definitely bring it up.
Yeah, because I really want to play that opening where he's just sitting there with his film canisters and saying, oh, this thing that we got here and it won this award. And it's like, oh, man, Rod. So. Okay, Bobby. It's all at the end. Welcome back. I'm glad you're back home, Whitland, and hopefully I'm better now than you were.
How is it possible that a man could be hospitalized for 22 consecutive days, and when he gets back, it's still season 5 of The Twilight Zone? Talk about cruel and unusual punishment.
I think you're hearing that the whole time.
I love this episode so much that I actually woke up in the middle of heart surgery and urged the doctor to hurry up and sew me back up immediately so I could get back here in time to talk about this. Unfortunately,
were you fighting the death of boredom while you were there, Bobby?
It was a wonderful experience. Unfortunately, my heart surgeon warned me not to expend too much energy talking about crappy Twilight Zone episodes, so I don't have a whole lot to say about this because I want to save my life. It's just more of the same. It's just, it's what the Twilight Zone does at its worst. There's no story here. It's just a character study. That's all it is. Every time they do a story that's about a person and the way he or she is, instead of putting a story behind it, it's simply boring. It's that simple. And there's just nothing here. I don't care about this crazy old fart and whether or not he thinks the clock is going to wind down. This doesn't matter to me. I have no interest in it at all. And frankly, I had trouble staying awake while watching it the other day for 90 seconds without slumbering, much less 90 years. And it was just, it's just slow and tedious, just like all the rest of them. And it absolutely goes nowhere at all. I know of no way it can be improved, regardless of the ending. It's just simply not interesting. It's like Robert said, there's no meat to the story. It just kind of goes along and along and along, like all the season five, well, most of, with two exceptions. So they all just go along. They're just taking up time. That's all. You can't wait to get to the end of the episode, and that's a real tragedy. Plus,
and we just don't have that much time, do we, Bobby? There's, you know, grass to watch grow and
I know, yeah.
Paint dry. Watch the paint dry. And,
I don't like Edwin. I never did. I failed to see his appeal. He's not funny. He's just plain annoying. There's just nothing there for me. I mean, even if the story had been great, he probably would have annoyed me too much for me to really enjoy it. So it's, you know, it's just another one. That's it. And it's just, like I say, the same thing over and over and over again. It's just a tragedy. It really is to watch this series kind of piss away like this. It's just not right. It's just like watching a baseball player play too long. He can't run the bases anymore. He can't hit the ball anymore. He can't see the ball anymore. And he's just living on the past. And it's just kind of sad to see it happen. So I take no joy in this as we go from week to week to week to week to week. The same thing over and over and over.
No joy in
that, Bill. Not really. Frankly, you know, Sterling should have given up the series. There have been series that have ended after four seasons because the producers and the creators felt that they had done everything. I mean, the Dick Van Dyke Show, which is one of my favorite sitcoms of all time, went 5 years, but, you know, they had enough stories to take it through five. Even Seinfeld ended after like 8 or 9 years because they felt they had done all the stories. So when you reach
the end... MASH went 11 years with only 3 years of the Korean War, so...
But you'll always be smart enough to realize that you've done your best, and that's it. I'd rather see a series end on a high note rather than kind of drag it out, because the final impressions are lasting impressions. You tend to remember the last thing, and after all the good episodes and all the classic things that were done, it's just a shame to see stories like this. It's just... I mean, Rod Serling, even in his introduction, seems tired. I know he wasn't well, and he died about 10 years later. But still, he looks like he's run out of gas, and it's not a pleasant thing to see. We got a lot of episodes yet to go. Oh God, when I think of them, with the exception of "Come Wonder with Me," is the only good one left.
I should bring my guitar with me that day to pick some tunes out.
That's the only one I'm looking forward to. Other than that, there's not much. Anyway, I think in my review I gave this a 1. I have no idea why. But unlike Robert, I'm perfectly willing to give out zeros, as everybody knows. I think I like the clock. The clock was nice. I'd like to own a clock like that. It was very nice. But other than that, it just frankly put me to sleep.
So are you changing your rating, Bobby? Because you got 0. Here on this.
Do I really have 0 there? I thought I gave it a 1.
Yes, you do. I'm afraid I have better ways to spend what time I have left.
Oh,
than
you're
to
right.
Watch
I did
this.
Say that. Oh my God, I forgot.
So did you find improvement? Are you changing to 1, Bobby?
No, I'll give you 0. Thanks. Thanks for reminding me.
Come on, Bobby. But we had him. But we almost had him.
No, I don't want to stop being incorrigible. Just because I have a pacemaker doesn't mean I'm acting any better. Lynn, back to you.
I can't believe you hate Edwin. Oh, well, anyway. Hi, Dave. I'm glad you made
it.
Woo!
Hi, everyone. Sorry I'm late. I think my clock was running slow.
Uh-oh.
Now, see, you give me when I'm off guard here, Dave. I don't know why you do that to me for. I got to find it now. There. Okay.
There you are.
Sorry for the delay on that.
Well, it's actually your turn, Dave.
See, I was thinking that.
No,
Dave, it's just in time.
If anybody else hasn't been, I'll certainly wait my turn.
No.
Go ahead, Dave. Go ahead.
You always go ahead, Bobby.
I give you all my points. I mean, my spot on the floor right now.
Okay, well, people listening later then, forgive me if I make points that have already been said, but it's certainly lovely to hear Bobby's enthusiastic voice again. Nice to have you back with us.
Yes, I'm renewed and rejuvenated after my heart transplant, yeah.
Good.
Heart transplant. You got a pacemaker.
Yeah, I'm glad to see you didn't have a cynical removal.
Oh, no, the doctor assured me that I wouldn't be any better than I was before, and he was right.
Well, you want to come out just as you went in. Yeah, brilliant. Thank you for that. Let me just remind everybody, if it's not been said before, of course, Series 5, Episode 132, December 20th, 1963. I can't rave over this one. This is a very light story. Character study, I think that, Bobby, I think that's about the best description you can give to it. My brother-in-law does, he loves Grandfather Crocs, and he has one. And as I'd forgotten the actual dialogue from watching it previously, but when I re-watched it earlier today, I'm chundering to myself all the way through, saying, these are 8-day clocks. What's he fussing about over it for? You have to touch it. And the whole idea, of course, of an 8-day clock was that that was one day spare. The idea is you wound it up every Sunday morning or something before you went to church, and it would do for a whole week till the next time you did it, and with one day to spare. Or if you went away for a week, you know, it would be going when you went, and it'd still be going when you came back. But, of course, there is a line of dialogue in it when he's going, when after he sold the clock as he thought, very smartly to the lady next door, where, of course, you can still go and tinker with it. But he said, I only have to go every other day. This is a very special clock, not an eight-day clock. It's one that runs for 2 days. So they did at least cover that, what I thought was going to be a plot hole with it. I must admit, the sort of Laurel and Hardy movers, you know, to me, to you, downstairs. I've never known of a clock like that being moved without you actually putting a latch onto the pendulum and stopping the clock for fear of, you know, damaging it in transport, as it were. So there's no way they'd try and take it down the stairs with it still being, you know, ticking away. In fact, the pendulum wouldn't tick if it wasn't vertical. It was coming down the stairs about 45 degrees, so that didn't work. The main character, I thought he was right for the job. He was that sort of likeable character. Maybe, as Bobby said, he's not an actor particularly like, but in terms of casting for this role, his delivery probably suited it. 77 years old when he acted this part. So for once, it wasn't a 50-year-old trying to pretend. You know, I sometimes watch these programs, you know, and they have some old man. And I think, oh, my God, he's younger than me. And well, at least this actor was, you know, in his 70s, only died just under 3 years after this aired. He was also, by the way, if I suppose somebody's already mentioned it, he was in the second ever episode of Twilight Zone.
One for the Angels.
One for the Angels.
Yeah, I like that.
So that was nice. Of course, that was dealing with death as well. He was a little salesman, and the devil does a deal with him. So the poor guy was the man to go to if you wanted a dead man walking. The other characters seem quite good. The doctor, played by William Sargent, he was in Series 4, Episode 113, called The Parallel. That's one where he goes to a parallel. Well, it's actually Steve Forrest, I think, who was the main actor in that. Where he goes to another planet. Again, apologies if all this has been said. So, yes, it was an inordinately light program. You could have told this in 10 or 15 minutes. It was a sort of an Aesop's fable type of story. But I quite like the actor. There was a sort of a twist at the end. I mean, the twist I thought was going to be, hello, he's going to do what he did only a couple of episodes by with the, you know, the old grandfather who had a robot of himself built, you know, where he falls down the stairs, and then the robot falls down the stairs and ends up the robot with a limp like the grandfather. I thought, we're just going to get the relief, and he's warning his granddaughter about, you know, I'll go downstairs, but be careful downstairs and make a cup of coffee. I thought it was going to go heads over tit, as it were, downstairs at that point. But they didn't do that. So it was a very mildly changed the ending that you might have thought. But I've actually probably talked longer than I could have told the whole synopsis of the story.
Dave, did you read the original story to this? Because there's a different ending. I was wondering, would you like the original ending, which was he died? And
yeah, it's based on grandfather's clock. Yeah.
Yeah, George Clinton Johnson.
Yeah. So I can only give it one for the story, and I'll perhaps give it one for the acting. So I'm stretching it a bit, giving it a two, but I like to be generous. I like to be counterbalanced to Bobby somewhat. So if he's the take Alba the talk, and back to you guys. A light story, really, it's a bit of a souffle of an episode, so not really a lot to get your teeth into.
Thanks, Dave. I had said that George Clinton Johnson, before you got here, we were talking about how his original story had the clock stopping and Sam actually died. And I thought that would have been better if they had left the story the way it was. It would have been more of a Zone-like episode. And George Clayton Johnson was very upset by the changes that they made to the script, and he refused to be credited in the closing credits. He went under a pseudonym in the closing credits.
The thing is, the story is not that strong that you actually care, really, which ending you use. I mean, really, it's not. it's not a strong story. I'll try to defend some of these stories, but I think I can only give it, as I say, one for the story, one for the old man's acting. Although, of course, he was basically acting. I haven't seen him in a lot of things, but you felt as though he's basically being himself. So I'll give it a very stretched two.
Yeah, I thought it was a little sappy. You know, I would have liked the original ending better. Okay, Rick?
Actually, not much I can add. I agree with most of what's been said. Surprise, surprise, because some people believe that I like quote-unquote crappy episodes.
Obi. Smart ass.
I can't discredit the acting. It was all right for what it was. I didn't know the whole story. I never read the original story, so...
So will this interest you to read it? Just out of curiosity, Rick?
Maybe.
I think I have the original story around here somewhere. I'll have to check.
But, you know, like I said, I can't discredit the acting. I kind of have the same thing as they did, because my dad at 92, actually about 80 some odd, started turning old blowtorches into lamps.
Really?
Yeah. And you know, well, he was a truck driver all his life. He never really had much time to do anything and stuff like that, so he developed a hobby. And, you know, my siblings were saying, well, what's he doing? You know, he just gives them away? Because he did. You know, he gave them to people and stuff. They go, why doesn't he sell them? And I go, look, he doesn't want to. He's doing it for fun as a hobby. Let him have it.
And not everybody has to make a profit out of something.
Yeah, but my siblings are all about money. Anyway, I'm not going to get into my family problems. But anywho.
So in other words, if they were in New Orleans, it would fit right in with the mess.
Yeah.
Oh.
But I'll give it a one just because of the acting. But the story and everything else, boring, slow.
Very slow,
like
yeah.
Like a snail. Just going along.
Yes, it was. Okay, so you're giving it a one, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we have 3 ones, a 0, and a 2. Okay, so this wasn't like a well-liked story, and rightly so. It was very slow and boring. But the next story that we have coming up, and oh, what date is that? That is going to be on the 30th. That's going to be on Saturday, August 30th. Ring-a-Ding Girl, starring the very pretty Maggie McNamara. And, God, I forget who else is in it. Nobody has... Of any notoriety, but
now here we go again with this story, Lynn. We know what happens with this one, and so we couldn't stay with the original ending with this one. When the next, you know, okay,
yeah,
just saying,
yeah, just saying. All right, so our next one is going to be. Ring-a-Ding Girl, and that's going to be Saturday, August 30th. And once again, since Dave came in late, I just want to mention, Dave, that I acknowledge the passing of Robin Williams. And it's very, very sad thing. Great actor, great comedian. And, you know.
Lauren Bacall.
And Lauren Bacall and Ed Nelson. They'll all be missed.
And Mr. Peyton Place himself.
Yeah, Ed Nelson, and one of Fugitive episodes, yeah. So, the Peaceful Valley one.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, now I forgot the name of it, but yeah, that's the one.
To the point when me and my wife, Julie, watches these shows and we point out who's dead. Well, this person's dead.
Oh, yeah.
This person's dead. It's like watching The Odd Couple last night. Well, your two main characters are dead.
Yeah.
They're not long anymore.
Well, you know, it's funny. They were showing clips of Robin Williams' movies, you know, and I've liked this about all of his movies. And they showed the one, which doesn't get much mention, but I really liked it, Patch Adams.
Yeah, I like Patch Adams.
I liked that very much. He was in that with Philip Seymour Hoffman. And now they're both dead. And they were both fairly young. And it's just, amazing. You watch some of these movies or some of these clips, and you say, oh, my God, he said half the cast has said. So sad.
Well, Robin Williams' last movie, Night at the Museum 3, is supposed to come out sometime. He was able to complete that. But
he was working on four movies. He was working on four movies.
They were talking about doing a Miss Doubtfire 2, but unfortunately that didn't make it. So
yeah, that's not going to be happening now. Yeah, I liked the Night at the Museum movies. Yeah, he was very good in those. And, he was working on a couple others. I always liked the animated Disney, the Aladdin. He was great as a genie.
Oh, yeah. He was, yeah.
He was terrific. Yeah, he was very talented. Going to really miss him. But, the other one, one of the last ones, he did 1 Hour Photo. Mm. That didn't get a lot of critical acclaim, but I thought he was great in that.
Well, it shows the diversity of Robin Williams. He not only could do comedy,
but
he could do drama. Yeah, it's like Jim Carrey the same way. He can do comedy, and he also does some dramas too. But, I mean, Robin Williams' movie is well-known. I mean, he's got a whole laundry list of stuff he's done over years.
Oh, he's so talented.
Society,
Fisher King, yeah.
Awakening.
Awakenings, I love that Poet Society.
Yeah, Goodwill Insomnia.
Goodwill
Hunting.
Yeah, he won the Oscar for that, yeah. I mean, he was such a terrific actor. It's such a waste of talent, such a loss, you know. He was wonderful. But anyway, we'll miss you, Robin. But, okay, so 2 weeks from now, we're going to do Ring a Ding Girl. So I hope I'll see everybody there. I hope everybody has a great rest of the weekend. And no more rain, Rick.
Yeah, please.
Better be sunny now. Okay, guys. Have a good one.
Let's go live to Ollie Williams with the weather report. Ollie?
It's raining sideways.
Sounds rough, Ollie. Do you have an umbrella?
Had one.
Where is it?
Inside out, 2 miles away.
Is there anything we can do for you?
Bring me some soup.
What kind?
Turkey.
All right, we'll get on that.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend. And on that note, I'll see you in 2. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Next time we enlist the aid of a very talented scribe, Earl Hamner Jr. He's written a story called Ring-a-Ding Girl, and in the milieu of fantasy, this one is strictly a Blue Ribbon entry. It stars Maggie McNamara, and it involves a movie actress, a publicity tour, a strange flight, an airplane, and some occult occurrences designed to send shivers through you like a fast subway train. Next time out on the Twilight Zone, Ring-a-Ding Girl.